You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. This April marks the 50th anniversary of the end of the Vietnam War, after North Vietnamese forces captured the capital of South Vietnam, Saigon. During the final weeks of the war, the U.S. government enacted a plan to get thousands of Vietnamese orphans and children, some of whom were born to American servicemen, out of South Vietnam for adoption abroad. These military flights were known as Operation Baby Lift, and they brought over 3,000 children to families in Europe, Australia, Canada, and the United States. Today, we're speaking with one of those adoptees. Wen Friedlander was aboard the last Operation Baby Lift flight out of South Vietnam and adopted by a family here in the Sacramento area. She spent years tracking down and reconnecting with her birth mother in Vietnam, as well as her birth father, an American soldier. Wen is also planning to go back to Vietnam on the anniversary in April with other adoptees to try to help them find their own birth families. She joins us now. Welcome.
Hi, Vicky. Thank you for having me.
Well, of course, let's start from the beginning. From what you can remember, what you could document, what were the first few years like growing up in Vietnam?
Sure. So I was born in Vietnam in 1971 during the war, and I lived with my birth family until I was almost 4 years old. And then towards the end of the war, my birth mother became concerned for my safety because of my mixed race status. And so she took me to Saigon to meet with Sherry Clark, who was the director of one of the adoption agencies, the Friends of the Children of Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And what I knew about myself growing up came mainly from Sherry's affidavit that she wrote when my birth mother relinquished me, and that, again, that my birth mother was a Vietnamese woman, my birth father was an American serviceman, and that I was being relinquished only because of concern for my safety.
I mean, the fact that you were born in 1971, you were only 4 or 5 years old when this happened. Do you have any memory of that time?
I do. So, I mean, I when I was little, I used to talk about having two mothers. I remembered having two women with long black hair that took care of me. I remembered our home, which was really simple. There was no running water. I used to talk about that we had a pig outside. Our kitchen was outside. And I had memories of just sitting in the dirt. That was how I passed my time. I think probably most vividly was my last memory of going by Seaclo with my birth mother to meet Sherry Clark. I didn't know her name was Sherry Clark at the time, but she was a blonde woman and she had a blonde child with her, which was one of the strange details of my memories. It's like, what was this white woman and her son doing in Vietnam at that point in the war? But that was my memory of being taken to meet her, and certainly the vivid memory of the last day where I was taken and left at the orphanage.
Do you know if your mom talked to you about what was going to happen at that time, or did you have any idea? I mean, you were so young.
No one explained to me what was going on at the time. The last thing that I remembered my birth mother telling me was that she would be back for me that night with my dinner, and she never came for me. And what happened was a nun blew a whistle as it was getting dark, and the children all lined up to go inside, and I was crying, and I went up to the nun, and I said, my mom hasn't come for me. And this was all in Vietnamese because that was my first language. And the nun just very kindly said, oh, I think we have a place for you.
Oh. So what happened once you got here to the United States? You ended up here in the Sacramento area. What was your trip like, that voyage?
So what I recall after that memory, that night at the orphanage, was the next memory is being on one of the airplanes and just being really sick. That was the beginning of a lifelong travel sickness issue that I've had. And so my memory is of being sick on the plane, and then a memory of coming. I never knew if it was the Philippines or the Presidio, but being bathed and kind of cleaned up before coming to the what is the Continental Care Center in Denver, mm-hmm. is sort of where they housed some of us, at least for the Friends of the Children of Vietnam. That's where we were housed.
Mm. And then how did you get from Colorado to here?
So there was a volunteer flight attendant who escorted me from Denver to Sacramento, and I arrived into my new family on Mother's Day, 1975.
Oh, wow. And your adopted family?
Yes.
Adopted family.
Yes.
Given that your birth father was an American soldier, why didn't his family take you in or adopt you?
So what I learned later was that my parents had tried to get married, and because my birth mother had immigrated from Hanoi during the mass exodus in 1954, when the French and Catholics left Hanoi, she was of Northern Vietnamese descent, and so they were not allowed to get married. The army did not allow them to get married. And so when my birth father came back to the States, he didn't know how to connect with her or help her to get over here.
Yeah.
So that was...
Did he have any idea about you?
Yes, he did. And that's something I discovered later when I was able to locate him, is, in fact, he had a picture of me from about the age of 2. And so that connection, I actually never had DNA testing with either of my birth parents, but I had these different pieces of evidence that I was their child, and they both had the same picture of me from about that age of 2.
Did he ever try to look for you when, there was news coverage about Operation Baby Lift, maybe seeing if you ended up in the United States?
So what he had told me, because he did maintain contact with my birth mother for the first couple years of my life, he told me that one of his contacts in Saigon had relayed to him that I had been killed in the baby lift crash and that my birth mother had died trying to leave for Thailand. And so he, at that point, had kind of given up looking for us because he thought we had died.
Yeah. And one of those flights, I think it was the initial flight.
Yes, the April 3rd, the C-5A Galaxy transport mm-hmm. plane, which is an enormous plane. The rear cargo door burst open, causing the plane to crash, and it landed in a rice paddy outside of Saigon. The surprising thing to me was that there were a lot of survivors on that flight, but there were, I think, I don't want to quote the exact number, but maybe 176 people died on that flight.
So. Yeah. And he thought that you were among one of those
yes.
people who passed away or children who passed away. I want to spend a little bit of time in Sacramento. How was it like adjusting with your new family? Not only a new family, but a new country, a new culture.
I think it was, looking back on it, it was hard. When I was 4 years old, I think I was incredibly resilient. I think I was fluent in you know, four-year-old Vietnamese when I arrived. And by that August, when I started preschool, I was only speaking English. And so I think this was the survival skill, right, of like just quickly integrating into the new family and shutting out any memory that I had of my previous life, kind of self-protective. And so I think I adjusted really well, you know, but that was also part of, I think children who go through trauma, some of us have a fight or flight response to things, but we also have what they call like feign and fawn. And the fawning for me was my coping skill, which was, you know, adapting, people pleasing, being compliant. And so in that way, the transition was easier because I was a really well-behaved, compliant child.
How are your adoptive parents?
They are amazing people. They divorced within 6 months of my adoption.
Oh, wow.
And so in that respect, I think I had sort of a typical growing up with divorced parents. And I also have a sister, their biological child. But they are, I mean, I this is part of, I think, when I think about adoption and what happened in my life, there is some kind of peace with I was connected to the people that I think I was meant to be parented by. And so I'm very grateful for my adoptive parents.
Yeah. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're speaking with Wen Friedlander about her experience leaving Vietnam as a child during Operation Baby Lift and reconnecting with her birth parents. So I want to get to that reconnection. Was it always a part of you throughout your life that you wanted to find your birth mother and your birth father?
I didn't think it would be possible because for most of my growing up years, we didn't have diplomatic relations with Vietnam. And until under the Clinton administration, I don't know if it was 1993, the trade embargo was lifted and we had diplomatic relations again. And so then that became a possibility that I could go back.
Was there a specific moment where that light bulb went off and you're like, hey, I actually want to create some momentum to make this a reality?
Yeah. So in 1995, I had a broken heart. I was really feeling rejected and just examining, like, I think I'm in this abandonment cycle where I keep going back to this relationship that is not going to work out. And then the light bulb was like, I think I'm reenacting my rejection from my birth mother. And so the same week that the breakup happened, I happened across this People magazine article, and it was April, and it was the 20-year anniversary of the end of the war, and they were highlighting the Operation Baby Lift flights and talking about adoptees, and a couple of them had gone back. And so that just inspired me to start saving money and go back to search.
How did you find your mom?
So this was something unique in my situation, is that my dad, my adopted dad, during my adoption process, had stolen a copy of my birth certificate. So even now in California, once an adoption is sealed, people do not have access to their original birth certificate. And he had volunteered to curry some paperwork from one destination to another. And in the midst of that, he made a copy of the birth certificate. And so I had information that most people don't have. And so so when I arrived in Saigon, I went with my aunt, who is also an adoptee, and all I had was my birth certificate, which had the location of where I had been born and the name of my birth mother.
Was it easy finding her? I would imagine it wouldn't be.
This is one of those miraculous things where it was easy. So on our second, let's see, on the first full day that we were there, we went looking for the adoption agency where Friends of the Children of Vietnam had been located, and we couldn't find it. But we found a Vietnamese man who spoke English. And when I told him my story, his name was Cheat. And Cheat said, oh, no problem. You know, it's going to be easy to find your birth mother. So the next day we had hired a car, and I called Cheat and I said, do you want to go with us? You know, we're going to look for the place where I was born. And he said, sure. So Cheat took us, and we went to about 6 different police stations, which was a little intimidating at that time in 1996, because they warn you about don't photograph police stations, don't approach police stations, and we're going right into the police stations asking for information about my birth mother. By the end of the day, we went to the police station, and they directed us to the church, and they said, your birth family would go to this church. And the priest looked at my birth certificate, and he said, oh, I know the witness to your birth. And so within 5 minutes, the witness to my birth came up. And we were just kind of astounded at that point. And then about less than 30 minutes later, this elderly man and woman came walking up, and both of them are crying. And it's my grandfather and my aunt. And this was the other mother. So I did have two mothers growing up. It was this younger sister who used to take care of me. And so that was the second day where we had found my family.
Wow, that had to have been just profoundly emotional.
Yeah, yeah. But it was also like, is this real? Is this a hoax? Because there was some concern about people taking advantage of, like, maybe they aren't really who they say they are. But she had this tattered photo of a child, and And like I said, later on, my birth father had that same photo as well.
We're going to listen to a clip of you reuniting with your birth mother in 1996. Let's take a listen.
I don't forget your heart, Dad. Every day. I miss you every day.
Yeah, you can just hear how mm-hmm. emotional that is, and her saying, I miss you every day.
Yeah.
You going back to that moment and that heart-wrenching decision, given the circumstances, it was the end of the Vietnam War. How many times have you been able to see your birth mother since that first reconnection back in 1996?
I have been back 6 times, and I'm going back for the 7th time in April.
That's amazing. We have a few minutes left, and I, of course, want to focus on your birth father. You did reconnect with him as well, which is incredible.
Yeah. So when I met my birth mother, all she could tell me was his name was Bluesy. And I was like, I've never heard of this name. And as it turned out, I mean, this took some time. It turned out that she had an uncle who had worked in the same office. So I got a little information that my birth father had been both at Long Binh and Phu Lam and in communications. And so when I got back to the States, this is 1997 that I'm looking. So the internet is in its infancy.
Right.
I'm on message boards with Vietnam vets, and this group called the Phu Lamers ended up being pivotal in helping me figure out, because I don't know what an infantry unit is or what, I have no knowledge of that. And so they ended up helping me get the duty roster, you know, narrowing down, well, he would have been in this department, it was these years. And it took about 18 months, but finally in 2000, I got a copy of that duty roster and I saw the name Paluzzi. And so it's an Italian last name with a P, and Vietnamese does not have that hard P sound. So I knew that that was him when I saw the name on the roster.
That must have been incredible for him because he thought that you passed away.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and when I did finally call him to reach out, it was kind of shocking as well how easy it was, because I told him, you know, my birth mother is Lay Thi Dem, and I think you are my birth father. And he said, I think I am too. So it was that easy, mm-hmm. right?
How many times have you been able to see him?
I saw him in person twice. Unfortunately, he passed away in 2020. But I did have a chance to meet him, and my kids met him. And so I felt some closure in that as well. And I think he felt closure because he knew that I had had a good life. And that was really my main objective in finding him, was to let him know I was okay.
Yeah. I mean, I can only, I 100% believe that, thinking that a child had passed away and to find out decades later that you are alive and healthy, and the fact that you get to reconnect. We only have a minute or two left. This story of yours is extraordinary. Is it likely that people who were, or children who are part of Operation Baby Lift, can reconnect with their family in the way that you were able to reconnect with your birth parents?
Yeah, I think my story is an exception in how I found, you know, without DNA, found my family. But now with the advent of DNA, the possibility is very real for connecting people. And so that's part of why I'm going back to Vietnam in April as a part of an organization called Vietnam Family Search. It's a group organized by Australian adoptees. It's nonprofit, adoptee-led, and we are going to be doing a 5-day bicycle tour through the Mekong Delta, distributing DNA kits and hoping to get more birth mothers in the registry so that the people over here who are taking DNA tests will get matched. And so that's really my hope. And part of why I'm so grateful to be here with you today to talk about that is raising some awareness, and, you know, hopefully that will be a successful event in April.
I remember reading about Operation Baby Lift, and you ended up with a family that was amazing, and you had a relatively good experience considering the circumstances that brought you here. But it was controversial for a lot of people. Given that you've been able to talk to others who have been touched by this, either they were an adoptee or they were part of Operation Baby Lift, what have you learned about that?
So what I've learned is that, unlike my case, which was well documented and was voluntary, there were children who were not orphans who got kind of swept up in the chaos, and that, you know, were not mixed race. So people who were a full Vietnamese ended up being taken out of the country as well. And so, you know, it is controversial. And probably just like most people's experience here in adoption, not every adoption is a great placement. So that's hard, you know, to know that people didn't have a good experience.
Finally, why do you keep going back to Vietnam? Because not only for yourself, but to now help others.
Yeah, I feel really connected to Vietnam. My family is there. So this is also something unusual, is that I've maintained a relationship with my birth family for almost the last 30 years, and I have been able to send them money and help build a house for them. And so I'm really grateful for the relationship that I have with my extended family there. Sometimes I'm sad that it's so far away, because when you get on a plane, it takes a really long time to get there. And it's, you know, I wish it were more conveniently located to where I live now. And it's, you know, that's part of the challenge, is feeling like one foot in each country. Right.
Yeah. It's like a day of travel and then a day of time change.
Yeah.
So, well, Gwen, thank you so much joining us, and safe travels in April.
Thank you so much, Vicki.
Gwen Friedlander is a family and marriage therapist in the Sacramento area and was one of the last children flown out of South Vietnam during Operation Baby Lift. She'll travel back to Vietnam in April to visit her family and to help other adoptees try and locate their birth parents. Still ahead, if you're not feeling the love for Valentine's Day this year, Sacramento musicians have you covered. We're going to get a taste of Love Sucks, an anti-Valentine's Day cabaret. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.